Well, welcome everyone to our first ever Windows Azure Conf. This is a virtual online set of talks that we're doing today, completely free. I'm going to be kicking it off this morning with an overview of Windows Azure. And then there's a bunch of great content from the community that you're going to see throughout the rest of the day. And we have two tracks that will be going on simultaneously. And the beauty there is you can switch between talks at any point throughout the day. Over the next couple hours. And there's some really great content you're going to be able to see. Again, all of it after me is from our MVPs and insiders within the actual community. And so you're actually hearing straight from the source of people that are building applications and solutions on top of Windows Azure and hear about their experiences, the good, bad, the ugly, and all the best practices that you can pick up from them. So exciting day. Hope you get a chance to watch as much of the content live as you can. You can ask questions interactively throughout all of the sessions, and this is the best way to get immediate feedback from the speaker, and it's built in directly into the page that you're looking at now. And we'll also make all the talks available on demand later so that you can download them and watch them offline if you miss a talk that you want to see or you need to step out at any point. My name is Scott Guthrie. I work on the Windows Azure team and help run it. And I'm going to be spending the next now kind of 75 minutes just providing kind of an overview of what is Windows Azure from a platform perspective. So if you're brand new to the platform, you can learn more about it and kind of how it all fits together. And even if you have some experience with Windows Azure, this will provide a good way for you to kind of see all the new features that we've been coming out with over the last couple months. And you might also pick up a few new tips and tricks along the way. You know, for people that are new to Windows Azure, people often ask, what is Windows Azure? Well, Windows Azure at a high level is Microsoft's cloud computing platform. It's designed to enable you to build applications and scale them really robustly and really enables a lot of power. We've been focusing the last year really on three core tenets with Windows Azure that you'll see kind of reflected throughout this talk. The first is to make it really flexible and enable you to handle pretty much any workload on top of it. We pioneered at the beginning of Windows Azure a couple years ago this concept we call Platform as a Service. And Windows Azure provides a set of managed, scalable services that you can take advantage of as a developer. And we continue to kind of push that forward with a bunch of great features. We've also, this past year, introduced a concept we call Infrastructure as a Service, which is the ability to host and scale durable virtual machines in the cloud as well. The beauty with that is you can install Windows or Linux or any OS you want as part of that. And this combination and the ability to run both platform as a service and infrastructure as a service together ends up being kind of a really powerful combination and makes it super flexible. We've also focused a lot this year on making Windows Azure even more open, meaning that you can use whatever operating system you want with it, whatever framework you want with it, whatever set of tools you want with it. It really opens up the most possibilities in terms of building on the platform. The other thing that we've really focused on as part of this openness is to use open protocols wherever possible. And so we use the Memcached protocol, for example, for our caching solution. We now support the new AMQP messaging protocol for our service bus set of solutions. And that means that you can basically interoperate very easily with our services and, again, integrate with what you already have. We've also then taken all of our SDKs for Windows Azure and released them under an Apache 2 open source license and hosted them on GitHub. And then lastly, we focus a lot with Windows Azure on providing a really solid platform and one that you can bet your business on and that you know is going to be reliable. And so built in across the system is the concept of redundancy. And within our managed services, we provide guaranteed SLAs that you can bet on. And again, know that your applications will scale and scale reliably. Windows Azure itself is deployed around the world. And so we have a concept we call regions in Windows Azure, which is where you can choose to place your code and run. And we have data centers within those regions that we do the hosting for you inside. And we have multiple regions in the United States and North America. We have four regions currently in North America. We've got two regions in Europe, and we have two regions in Asia. We also, as you can see on this slide here, have a number of what we call CDN edge points around the world, which we can use to cache your content and deliver it even faster to customers. And what you're going to see over the next couple months and years is us rapidly expand our footprint of data centers around the world so that you have even more options in terms of where your code runs and where you can host it. And the beauty about Windows Azure is all of our features are available in all the data centers in all the regions around the world. So once you build an application and build a solution, You can basically choose where you want to run it in the world, and you can move your workloads from region to region. You can also run your applications in multiple regions simultaneously and then just direct traffic and customers to whichever version of that app is closest to them. That gives you kind of a global footprint and the chance to reach an even bigger audience. A lot of people often ask me, so what does a data center look like? You know, is there a bunch of folks pulling and plugging in computers inside there? And the answer is there is no, actually. Our data centers are massive facilities, and they basically host tens or in some cases hundreds of thousands of servers. And they're completely lights out. And so basically a region or data center might have containers full of literally hundreds of thousands of servers. We have people that help place the machines in. But from that point on, all administration of the machines is done remotely. And the beauty is, as a developer, you actually have that remote control. So you can use either an admin console, which we'll walk through later, or a set of command line REST APIs or scripting APIs that you can script against to basically automate all of the deployment and all of the core operations that you do on top of your applications. And this enables a very powerful model for you as developers. It also enables a very efficient model from a power and pricing perspective, which enables you to kind of run your apps very cost effectively. What I thought I'd do is just show a quick view of what the inside of a data center looks like so you can get an appreciation of this. So this is a view of one of our data centers in the north central region. You can see here we have containers full of tens of thousands of servers. We have very strong people that work there. This is a case of they're actually reeling in a new container of servers. Once it's plugged in, we basically wire up electricity and cooling. And from that point on, it's pretty much a lights out operation. And so when you sit in the admin console or admin portal of Windows Azure and you say deploy something, it's sending a REST call to that region, a server is picked, and then your application is deployed. And all of that is, again, automated, enables for a very fast, very fluid, and very cost-effective way to deploy and run your applications. And the other thing I just mentioned about Windows Azure before we dive into the demos, that's kind of different from a traditional hosting model that you might be familiar with, and certainly very different than an on-premises environment, is that with Windows Azure, you pay only for what you use. So there's no upfront costs. There's no need to buy any licenses. So when you use Windows inside a virtual machine in Windows Azure, you're not having to buy a Windows Server license. That's just included in the price. Likewise, if you use a SQL database, through our SQL database feature in Windows Azure, you're not having to buy a SQL Server license. That's also included in the price. And what's nice is that for compute and for things like websites and VMs and such, you only have to pay by the hour. And so if you use that VM for an hour, you're only going to pay a couple pennies for that hour. And then if you turn it off and shut it off, you stop. There's no payment for it. And the benefit there is it kind of gives you this flexibility where you can scale up and scale down your solutions, turn them on or turn them off very cost effectively. And it opens up just a ton of possibilities in terms of the new types of apps that you can build if you need a lot of capacity quickly and then you don't need it as much afterwards. And it also means that from a business perspective, you can start to build applications very cost effectively with no upfront costs. And then just as your business scales up, you know, that's actually when you actually go ahead and pay for those resources. So it's a very nice economic model to take advantage of as well. And what I'm going to do now for the rest of this talk is just kind of give you a tour of Windows Azure, walk you through a lot of the core features, and kind of ground you in terms of some of the capabilities it provides. And the first set of features I want to walk through is something we call virtual machines. And if you're familiar with kind of traditional hosting, this is probably the feature that feels most familiar or most consistent with what other hosting providers offer. And this is the ability for you to stand up a virtual machine with either Windows or Linux in it that you can basically remote desktop in or SSH into and run any workload. And these virtual machines allow you to be admin on the box within the virtual VM. And so you can install anything you want on them. They're durable, meaning if you reboot the VM, it's still there when it reboots and all the stuff you stored to disk is still there. And it basically lets you run any type of workload. So if you want to install SQL, you can. If you want to install a NoSQL solution, you can do that too. You want to run SharePoint, you can do that. Again, provides ultimate flexibility in terms of what you want to do. It also provides the ability to do what we call virtual private networking. So you can actually deploy a VM in the cloud. You can group them together so that they're actually in their own private network hosted in the cloud. You can also then connect it back to your own corporate network if you have one and have a VPN secure tunnel link your machines running in your own corporate environment up to these machines in the cloud and make it look like they're all part of one connected network. So lots of flexibility both on the compute side as well as in the networking side. Let's go ahead and take a look at them. So I'm going to go to the Windows Azure website right now, which is what you're seeing right here. So it's windowsazure.com, or you can just type in azure.com and it'll redirect. And this provides kind of a nice place where you can learn all about Windows Azure in terms of the capabilities and features it provides. We have a develop center where you can pick the language or framework of your choice. And you can find lots of great samples and tutorials for how to use the individual features about them. We have a pricing page if you want to try to cost out how much something is going to cost. So for example, for this demo here, if I want to turn on, let's say, one extra small VM, you'll notice it's going to cost me 1.3 cents per hour in order to run this, or about $9.36 per month in order to run it. So it's pretty easy to try to calculate how much things are going to cost. And then if you want to, you can just click the free trial button in order to sign up for a free 90-day trial. This is a no-obligation trial. You don't have to buy anything at the end of the day. And we won't charge you anything during the trial. So there's what's called a spending limit, which is set to zero, so that if you do anything that would cause you to actually pay, we'll warn you and we'll actually block you from doing it unless you explicitly say, I want to pay. So it's kind of designed to make sure that, that you never get billed during the trial unless you explicitly buy something. And so you can sign up that free trial very easily in order to get started. And once you do, you just click this portal link on the top right of the website, and you'll be logged into what we call our Windows Azure admin portal. And this basically provides a unified view for all the resources that you have deployed in the cloud. And so you can see kind of a listing of them here. You can also filter by categories of resources and drill into them. And so, for example, if I want to create a virtual machine, our portal has a common way to create things. You just go to the bottom left and you click New. This gives you a category of different types of things you could create. We're going to create a lot of these things throughout the day. But if I just want to get started and create a virtual machine, we can call this Windows Azure Conf 5. There's already Windows Azure Conf. It looks like Conf Demo 5. There we go. That's looks like a hopefully unique domain. There we go. I can pick, for example, what operating system I want to use. So you notice we have a combination of Windows as well as Linux operating systems that you can pick from. So I could use the new Windows Server 2012 release. I could also use Ubuntu. I could use CentOS. I could use SUSE if I wanted to do a Linux distribution. I can choose the size of the machine I want to run on. So in this case here, I'm just going to say I want to run it on a small instance, which is one core and about just under 2 gigs of memory. And then I can pick a password that I want to use. And I can pick what part of the world I want to run it in. So I'm going to run this in the East U.S. region, which is located in the Virginia area. Go ahead and hit Create, and that's all I need to do in order to create and stand up a virtual machine. And so you can see here that Windows Azure has kicked off this deployment process. This little icon down here indicates it's doing something. You can kind of minimize that so that you can do other things in the portal. You're not blocked by waiting for that. And in a few minutes, I'll basically have a virtual machine exclusively for my use created that I can log into. Now, I happen to have one already that I'm using to actually host one of my websites. This is actually the skyguru.com domain. So if any of the images from my blog, if you ever wondered, are actually coming off of the server right now. You'll notice when you drill into a virtual machine, we provide a nice view that shows you the live traffic that your site or server is currently getting. So you can see I'm doing about 157 kilobits per second network traffic I/O right now. I can, if I want to, go ahead and just RDP into it by hitting the connect button. And enter my password. This is actually a Windows Server 2012 machine, and I'm now logged in. And so this is literally hosting my images for my blog. I basically am an admin on the box. I can do anything I want. Oh, my password expires today. That's great to learn. I can basically literally deploy anything I want on this. So if I wanted to install SQL on this, I could. If I wanted to install SQL Express on it, I could. I'm literally a full admin on this machine. One of the things you'll also notice inside the portal is we have a concept we call disks. And this is provides you the ability to mount drives onto your virtual machine. It's pretty easy to do that. You just go ahead and down here, you'll notice there's an attach button. You can just say attach an empty disk. and give it a size and hit OK. And we'll basically then mount a device on that virtual machine that you can then format into whatever operating system disk format you want to use. So for Windows, it'd be NTFS. For Linux, you could pick a Linux-specific file system format. And once you kind of mount this, you'll notice in your virtual machine, it'll show up. And so this F drive that I have right here that I'm using to store my blog content, this is basically just shows up as a disk drive that I can then copy and save things into. The system takes care of everything else for me as part of that. I can run any workload now on top of here. You can basically, we'll give you a unique virtual IP address when you create a virtual machine. You can map any DNS entry that you want to it. And so you can also go ahead and have it look like any individual top-level domain on the internet. A couple questions from a few people here. Tugbert asks, is there any plans to support multiple IP addresses for a VM so that you can do multiple HTTPS endpoints? That's a good question. That's actually something that's coming. So you'll see that come in the next couple months, is the ability to use multiple IP addresses for services as well as VMs in the future. Ray asked a question, when are some of these things going to be out of preview? So specifically, he was asking about the virtual network support. So if I wanted to create a virtual network for use here, I just go ahead and click New Network, Virtual Network, click Create, and I can basically set up a subnet network that I can mount my VMs against. You'll notice inside these resources, we have the little preview tag. Anything with preview means it's still in preview. So for example, our VM website, mobile service capabilities in preview, cloud service isn't, nor of our data services. The different features will be coming out of preview over the next couple months. Basically, kind of our model is generally put it out in preview, really make sure that it's really robust and that we can meet the SLA that we're providing. And then once we do that, we take off the preview tag. So virtual machines as well as virtual networking will both be exiting preview next calendar year. And we're working very hard on getting those finished as soon as possible. Mike asked a question. The question was around when you turn off a VM, you know, does the cost stop? And so actually that's a good question. You notice there's a shutdown button here. For my VM, and so if I shut it down, that will actually power off the OS and turn off this machine. I will still get charged if my instance, though, is deployed, even if the OS isn't running. This delete button here, Mike, is what you want to do if you want to disable this instance entirely. At that point, you'll stop being charged. That's a good question. That's something that a lot of people often ask for. We also then have the ability to keep the disks and images. So if, for example, you delete the VM instance, you can still keep your OS disks and your data disks around, and then you can recreate a VM from those at a later point. So that's a little bit about virtual machines. A couple of things about the internals that I wanted to touch on that I think are pretty cool and worth calling out. The first is I want to sort of show a little bit in terms of how our virtual machines actually work under the covers, which is kind of related to that last question. And one of the things that we've kind of spent a lot of time working on as part of our virtual machine offering is providing what we call virtual machine portability. So when you create a VM in the cloud, like I just did there, what you're doing is you're creating on disk a VHD file, which is a hypervisor, a Microsoft Hyper-V based file format, which is actually encapsulating your OS instance as well as your data. And the nice thing about this VHD format is it's compatible across Windows Azure, across Windows Server, and even Windows Client. And it's also a format that we've released as an open spec so that others can implement as well. And what this means is if you create a virtual machine in Windows Azure, you can actually take that VHD file, or if you create a virtual machine in your own local desktop or on your own Windows Server on-premise, you can take that VHD file and you can actually just upload it to Windows Azure and boot it up. Likewise, that VHD or VM that we just created earlier inside Windows Azure, if I want to stop using Azure and host it somewhere else, I can actually just download the VHD file and boot it up somewhere else, like on my own local desktop or on a Windows Server running inside my enterprise. I could also then take those VHD files and host them with another Windows hosting provider that also supports Hyper-V. And so we have portability across different cloud providers and solutions as well. And the benefit here is you basically have no lock-in, and you have kind of maximum flexibility in terms of where you want to run things. And it's pretty easy to kind of see this, and I think we might even have some talks later today that'll walk through it. But if you go into the portal, we have, when you click on the top-level virtual machine tab, there's an images and a disks tab that you can see here. And so here's where you can actually see, for example, my Scott Goo website, VHD, and where it's stored. So this is kind of the different VHD kind of images that are being stored on disk. And if I use like a storage explorer, and this is just a free tool, in this case here from Cloud Explorer that I can use, you can actually connect to these remote storage drives as well. And here's actually also, again, another view of those VHD files that the portal is providing. And I can literally just take this, and if I right-click and download, I could kick off a download and download that VHD on my local machine, and then just boot it up with Windows 8 or Windows Server 2012. So again, that sort of speaks a little bit to the portability and the fact that it's really easy to upload and download any of these images and run them in multiple places. Other cool thing that we provide that's a little different with Windows Azure is a really powerful storage architecture that all of our virtual machines run on top of. And so, for example, when we booted up that drive or booted up that virtual machine earlier, and you saw those data disks that were attached to it, those disks weren't local disks. They were instead actually running on top of the Windows Azure storage system, which is basically providing the abstraction of a device that's attached to the machine. And the way the Windows Azure storage system works is when you store data, we actually store the data on multiple physical drives. And the benefit there is we have redundancy built in for you, so that if a drive goes bad, we can automatically continue reading and writing off of the other drives. We'll then rehydrate a new replacement version under the covers for you automatically. And the great thing is your VM never knows the difference. And so it gives you a lot of redundancy, a lot of kind of reliability that you can bet on. We can also automatically load balance our reads and writes from the drives. So we can spray out your reads across multiple physical drives so that we can also provide much more predictable performance for you to use. And on top of these physical drives that we use to back the storage, we also then have an SSD cache of drives that we use for journaling. And the benefit there is you're basically reading and writing through an SSD drive then backed against a physical disk. So it gives you kind of very reliable performance and hopefully ensures it's always on and something that you can use. So very reliable and consistent. We also do something nice, which is enable a feature we call continuous storage geo-replication, which is a bit of a mouthful, but it's a pretty cool feature. What it basically means is when you create a virtual machine or when you mount a drive, and this works for both virtual machines as well as for other things that you store in blob storage within your applications as well, we'll automatically, when you read and write to that drive, when you write anything to that drive, we'll automatically in the background copy it to another data center that's at least 500 miles away. And the benefit there is in the event of a natural disaster like a hurricane taking out a whole region, you know that your data basically is replicated somewhere else so that you can kind of have business continuity in that case. And this is something that happens for you automatically. You don't need to write a script or do a background job. Instead, we'll take care of this for you in the background. You can turn this feature off if you don't want it. You can get a price discount of about 30% when you turn it off. But it's on by default and gives you sort of peace of mind in terms of how you use it. Should also mention, since this is often asked for customers around the world, we never copy the data outside of a geopolitical boundary. So if you deploy your app in, say, North America, the data never leaves North America. Likewise, if you deploy your app in Europe, it never leaves the EU. So we're not copying between different jurisdictions around data. And again, if you don't want it, you can always turn it off. So that's a little bit about virtual machines. Let's switch gears now and talk about another feature that we introduced a few months ago that's very popular that we call our website model. And websites, at a high level, enable you to run websites. And they're basically designed to provide kind of a nice managed solution that enables you to very quickly stand up web applications and websites on the internet. It doesn't require you to spin up your own virtual machine or to manage anything. So it's basically kind of an auto-managed environment. Instead, you just tell us, I want a website, here's the DNS, let me copy the content, and we do the rest. It supports multiple frameworks, so obviously it has great support for Visual Studio and ASP.NET. We also support Node.js and PHP, and you'll see other languages get added to that solution list in the future as well. And it enables a very fast deployment model. Literally, you can deploy in seconds. You can use Visual Studio and WebDeploy or WebMatrix, but you can also just use FTP, you can use Git, and you can also use TFS. And those last two ones, Git and TFS, basically give you a way that you can integrate deployment with your source control solution to kind of enable a continuous delivery model. The beauty also about websites is the pricing starts at free, so perpetually free, and then you can scale them up as you need more capability, and you only start paying when you want more compute resources backing them. But it gives you the ability, you can effectively develop the entire site at no cost, and then scale it up only as needed. And let's go ahead and see some demos of that. So I'm going to go into our Windows Azure portal again, and we saw our virtual machines. It looks like our VM was actually created there that we started earlier. Let's now create a website. And so the same way I can create a virtual machine, I'm just going to say new, click on compute. You'll notice there's a website tab here. I can quick create it, and I can just go ahead and say SkyGoo demo site, give it some number. Go ahead and hit create. Just like before, I can choose what part of the world I want to deploy it in. We now offer websites in North America, Europe, and Asia. So you can choose where you want to place your site, whichever is closest to your customers. And then here you can see it's created. So it literally took about 6 or 7 seconds. And if I click on the website tab now, you can see there is my site. We have a very similar view of what the site looks like in the sense of it'll have a dashboard you'll see in a few seconds that they'll be populated once we deploy content to it, showing me real-time traffic information. I can now deploy apps into it. So let's deploy it. So one easy way to deploy things if you're using Visual Studio is to click this Download Publishing Profile link, which is on the right-hand side. And just go ahead and click it, and what that'll do is download a little XML settings file onto disk. And then I can go into Visual Studio, create a new project, and so I could create it, say, with ASP.NET MVC. Let's say my conf demo. Pick that template. We now support not only .NET 4, but also .NET 4.5 with the website model, so you can take advantage of async and all the cool features that have shipped as part of the .NET 4.5 release. And there we go. I've just basically created the simple internet project template inside Visual Studio. Let's go ahead and just build it. Great, that works. Now I'm going to go ahead and deploy it. And do that, I'm just going to go ahead, right-click, and hit Publish. And built into Visual Studio 2012 is this publishing wizard. You can also download it for Visual Studio 2010. It works not only in the Pro editions, but also in the Express editions of the Visual Studio tools. So you can use it with the free tools as well. All I need to do when I click off the Publish is just import that file. I don't remember what I called that. I think it was that one. That will import all of my password settings and username accounts, and I go ahead and hit Publish. And this will kick off a publishing process, so it'll bring up the output window here. You can see we're uploading the content right now. It's adding the appropriate ACLs. And when it's done, it's going to pop open a browser. And in a few seconds, you can see my site is live on the web. So that literally, from start to finish, creating a website, building it in VS, right-click deploying, that was how fast it was. It just took seconds. And if I want to make a change, so we can go ahead and say, how about welcome to ASP.conf. Oh, it's not ASP.conf, it's Azure Conf. I clearly do too many of these conferences. Go ahead and hit publish. You'll notice one of the nice features we have built into the website model is this thing we call incremental deployment. So instead of having to redeploy my entire application, it'll just show me the files that have changed. Go ahead and hit publish again. And now it's going to just upload those three files. Again, in a matter of seconds, my deployment is updated, and you can see our changes are applied. So that's how fast it is to get started, how fast to deploy, and then how fast to incrementally deploy at a later point. What's cool about the deployment process is it works not only for apps and content, It also works for databases. And so you can create a website with a database built in. So you'll notice if you go to here, not only is there a quick create, but there's also a quick create with database option, which will create a database for you automatically. And when you do that, or if you later, if you create a blank website first, you can then what's called link a database that you already have at a later point, and then re-download that publishing profile. That will go ahead and enable you inside VS when you hit publish to automatically deploy your database at the same time. And that'll work not only for the initial database deployment, but also for subsequent deployments of the app as well. And so, for example, if you're using the new Entity Framework code migration support that we shipped this past year, you can automatically have those migrations apply every time you do a an app deployment. So you can modify your schema at the same time that you modify your content. So a very powerful and very easy way to deploy your applications here. Couple other things just to mention as part of this. In addition to kind of supporting the ability to deploy apps directly inside VS, we also support the ability for you to deploy them through, as I mentioned, Git and source control. So for example, if I want to, I can go ahead and create another site real quickly. We'll call it ScottU Demo Conf 6. So we'll create a brand new second site here. And again, in a matter of minutes here, or seconds, I'll have a new site up and running that I can use. There we go. It's deployed. And I can drill into this. So this is another blank site. You saw me earlier deploy with Visual Studio. Here I'm going to go ahead and set up source control deployment. And so you'll notice there's a setup Git publishing link also on the right-hand side. I'm going to go ahead and click this. This will activate Git support for my site. So that I can push changes using source control to it. And you can see here it's standing up and creating the Git repository. It's now active. I can basically upload content directly from the Git command line or from a Git set of tools on my local dev machine. So I publish from my dev machine to Windows Azure directly. The other cool option that we've enabled is the ability for you to link your website with a CodePlex, GitHub, or Bitbucket hosting code repository as well. So if you're familiar with any of those type of solutions, in those cases, typically the developer is checking in code to say a branch inside GitHub or inside CodePlex. What you can do is link your Windows Azure website against that branch. And so anytime you push to say the master branch inside GitHub, Azure will automatically sync the code and deploy it. So a simple example here, I'm going to associate my website with a GitHub repository. I can just go ahead and click this link here. This will single sign me on to my GitHub account so I can see all of the repositories, both public and private, that I can use. I can then link it. So I've now linked my sample demo GitHub repository. Turns out I already have some code in that repository, and so immediately upon linking it, you'll notice that Azure sunk the latest version of my code, and it's now deployed. And if I go ahead and hit browse, you'll notice it says, hello, Azure, through GitHub. And that's basically because it just downloaded the code from GitHub, deployed it as part of my site, and now it is live on the web. And in fact, if I go to GitHub right now, you can see what that code looks like. So here is basically my code here. If I hit default CSHTML, there is basically the code in my GitHub repository that I just sunk, and it's a Razor file that I'm actually going ahead and running. What's nice now is, let's say I want to modify it. So I'm going to go ahead here and I have this repository local. Here's my default CSHTML. I could say, hello, Azure Conf. Time is at datetime.now. So it's making a simple change here. If I load, for example, the GitHub tool, client tool, you can obviously use the command line as well, but I'm just going to use this. This basically allows me to drill into my local repository so you can see it's picked up. There's a change applied there. I'm going to go ahead and say updated for Azure Conf and do a commit. And then I'm just going to basically sync this with GitHub. And when I do this now, I am pushing my changes up to GitHub, which will be where my master branch is. And so once it's synced with GitHub, so let's just hit refresh here to see if those changes. Okay, that's synced. If I go back to Azure now, you'll notice Azure automatically detected that change and pulled it down and deployed it. And you'll notice the updated for Azure Conf string within here. It even pulled down the commit message as part of it. And if I go and hit refresh now on that site we just created, notice that change is now live. And so that's literally how easy it is to set up a code repository. Again, whether it's with CodePlex, GitHub, or Bitbucket, or TFS Online, work with it as your main branch, and then when you check in, you can have Azure automatically sync those changes and literally have it live in seconds. And if you discover, oh, there's a problem there, you can either fix it in GitHub, or if you want, you can just go back into Azure and just redeploy the previous version. And you'll notice we keep track of all your version history details, and I can automatically now roll back to that previous version even on the Azure side. And again, that change is now live. And that's how fast and instantaneous we've tried to make the Azure experience. A couple other things people often ask about that is, okay, that's cool, but what happens if I don't want to be syncing my main branch every time? What if I want to have a production branch? Just go to the Configure tab on websites and scroll down. You'll notice here that we do give you the ability to control which branch you deploy from. And so right now I'm just defaulting to master, but you can also pick other branches as well. Again, gives you lots of flexibility and capabilities that you can use. And you'll notice also when we go back to our dashboard view now, it hasn't started showing up yet, but you'll start to see details in terms of traffic as the site gets used show up in this dashboard, so I can see pretty much in close to real time, there's a few minute delay, how my site's doing and how much traffic it's hitting. A couple questions people have asked for. Matt's asked a question about, what about SSL support for websites? When is that coming? That's definitely on the roadmap, Matt, both SNI as well as IP-based, IP address-based SSL support. So you will see that show up soon. If you want to SSL enable a Azure website today, so obviously you can use SSL with VMs, and you can also use it with cloud services. Websites, we don't have that feature yet, but it is coming. There is a cool site that you can check out called cloudflare.com. They actually let you map SSL endpoints to it and SSL terminate it, and then you can point to your Windows Azure website. That's a nice solution you might want to check out if you want to add SSL to your website today. And then you can go through them, and they have a free offer that you can take advantage of to do that. Other questions people had is, Stephen asked, where is the build happening? Do I need to check in my assemblies? Cool thing, Stephen, is you don't need to check in your assemblies. In the source control option, both for Git and TFS, you only have to check in your source control, or you only have to check in the source of your app. If you're using Git, we'll do the build actually on the same server that's hosting your website, so we have an automated build. So if you have an MS build file, we'll automatically build it for you. We also integrate NuGet, so we can automatically download your NuGet assemblies, so you don't even have to check in your dependencies into your source control branch. With TFS, we provide even richer options. So if you use the TFS online service, that's now in GA, so it's now general release, and you can actually build on top of it. They actually can automate a full TFS build in the cloud, and then they will push the final changes to you as well. And the experience from a dashboard view is pretty much 100% the same between both a TFS and a Git deployment. The only difference is this would say TFS instead of Git if I wired it up there. Yibo asked the question, would Team Foundation Services be supported in the future? Absolutely, it's actually supported today. All you need to do on a particular site is just go ahead and set it up when you want to enable it. So for example, this is that first site that we built and right-clicked with Visual Studio. You can see actually the dashboard view now showing me traffic. To enable TFS instead of Git, just go down here and you'll see there's a setup TFS publishing icon that you can go ahead and click. Yibo also has a question, is there a plan to support SMTP functionality with websites? I'll show you, you can actually do that today using the Windows Azure Store. I'll come to that in a little bit later on in the talk. So anyway, lots of cool capabilities you can take advantage of here. Hopefully you get a sense of just how easy and fast it is to use. Great thing about all this stuff that I demoed is it's free forever. So it doesn't actually cost any money in order to build and run these sites. Now they're running using what we call our free tier of websites, which gives you kind of a base set of functionality that you can use. So it's about enough to run about between 50 and 75,000 requests per day off of the site for free. So it's really great for development and for kind of low volume sites. What you can then do if you want to have even more capability on the sites is click the scale tab within the dashboard view. So just go ahead and click that, and that will give you the option to scale up your site from a free to what's either called a shared or reserved model of hosting. So if you go to a shared model, this basically gives you a couple extra features. It gives you more compute capability, and it also allows you to wire up custom domain names, both CNAME records as well as A records. So A records give you the ability to be scottgoo.com instead of www.scottgoo.com. Both of these are part of the shared model. If you want even more capability, you can then flip to the reserved model. And what the reserved model does is, unlike the shared and free model, where we might run multiple customers on a single machine in an isolated way, with reserved, we basically guarantee only your apps are running on the machine. So this makes you fully isolated from any other tenant, and it basically means you can use as much CPU on that machine as you want. And basically the way the reserved model works is you just select what size machines you want to run it on. So I could say I want to run a medium two-core systems, and let's say I want to run on two of these servers. Just go ahead and hit save. And once you do that, this is going to kick off what's called a scaling operation, where we'll basically take what was a free website and enable it now on two dedicated dual-core servers. And one of the neat things about the scaling operation is it's pretty fast. It generally takes somewhere between 15 and 20 seconds, so it's done. So that literally was as fast as it was. And now, instead of just running in the free tier, I now have four cores of processing and a couple gigs of RAM dedicated to this application. That was all it took in order to scale it up. I don't need to redeploy my app. I can still do all of the Git and TFS-based source control deployment stuff that you just saw. But now I have even more horsepower behind my application that I can handle any load. And the beauty is because I'm only paying for what I'm using, only when it's running in this mode am I paying money. If I turn around and say, you know what, actually I just want to go back to the free mode. Let's scale this back down to free and hit save. This will now do what's called a scale down operation on this website, and it's going to basically release those two VMs that I just allocated back into the pool, and then I'm going to run it back on the free tier of the website option, and I'm only paid for the hours that those servers were actually allocated. So in that case here, it probably would have cost me a few pennies because I'm only paying by the hour. There's no fixed cost. I didn't actually have to pay anything more than that. So this is ideal for cases where if you got a big event or you know that you have a big holiday season coming up and you want to sell a lot of things and you're going to get a lot of traffic, scale it up. When the event's over, scale it back down. And you only have to pay for what you use. A couple other questions people asked before I go on. What happens when with a website when a machine is being patched? Does the site go down while it's being patched? No, the great thing about this model is you never have to worry about patching. We do it for you. And we basically make sure your site's never down. So if a machine's being patched, we'll automatically move your site first to another machine before we patch it. And if a server blows up or has a hardware failure, we'll automatically run your site on another server for you. You don't have to manually do anything. We handle all of that for you. Brian asked a question of a website with a database. Is our cost on the database side or is the database also free? It's a good question, Brian. We offer a free database, which is MySQL based, today for a year that you can take advantage of. We don't today have a free SQL database option. It's something we'll probably add in the future, though. But SQL databases are also pretty cost effective. We do have a $4.99 a month database option, which is a full SQL database that starts at about 100 megs, and then you can pay up from there. Good question as part of that. So that's a little about websites. Let's keep going and talk about all the other features we got as well. So in the same way that we've made building web apps, and this is a little bit about that hosting model again. This is the shared model. So if I'm running free and shared, I'm one of several tenants on a machine. when I did that reserved model and said I want to run it on a virtual machine, we spun up a machine just for you, deployed your app into it, and now you're the only guy on that machine. And then likewise, if I say I want to run on two of those virtual machines, we'll spin up a second one there. And again, you're the only tenant on those machines. What's cool is if you want to, you can also deploy multiple sites into the virtual machine. So for example, you could actually have, you know, any number of sites that you've built in those virtual machines. But what we basically guarantee is only your apps are running there. So this is great if you're building sites for others or you have multiple sites that you want isolated, but they don't need their own machine by themselves. You can go ahead and set it up so that they deploy across multiple of them. So lots of options. Great thing is it starts at free, and then you can scale up as you need more capability. There's a great talk that you're going to see a little bit later on at this conference that you can watch of a site called mural.ly that you can check out. They're built on this website model of that I've just been showing. And they basically did 1 million requests on the launch day. They started off, I think, if I remember correctly, with Google App Engine, then went to Heroku, then went to Azure. And so they've evaluated a couple different cloud providers. They do about 90,000 requests per hour per server. And they've basically, they've wired up with GitHub and Git, and they've done over 1,500 deployments of their app already to using the Windows Azure website model, that same model I showed earlier. And so it's a great case study in action. They're going to be doing a talk later today, and so you can hear directly from them about their experiences, good, bad, ugly, and how they've kind of modeled it, and also kind of hear about how it's compared with other cloud providers that they've used. So definitely check out that talk later this afternoon. Should be a good one. In addition to making websites and web apps really easy with Windows Azure, we're also focusing a lot on making it easy to build mobile apps. And by mobile apps, I mean, you know, apps that work in your cell phone and devices, as well as tablets, as well as Windows 8 machines. We're basically making it really easy for you to build a cloud backend to support all those different types of apps. We basically provide data management, so you can store things. We do identity management, so you can enable sign-on, say, using a Microsoft account or a Facebook account or a Twitter account. Or a Google account, and also support push notifications. So from the server side, you can push out changes to those client devices as well as run server-side code. And the beauty here is, again, it works with Windows 8, Windows Phone, and iOS today. We're also adding Android support as well as vanilla HTML5 support in the future. And again, kind of the core model here is you build your client app, you can easily connect to your cloud backend service, store data in a secure way as part of that, log people in and authenticate them before they can write data. And then we also have this nice model that allows you to write custom script code on the server side that you can use to glue these resources together to do custom authentication or add a little bit of business logic. And then you can also fire off push notifications to the device so that when data changes, you can also push them out and let them know proactively in a push-based way. Again, this works with cross-platform with lots of different devices. So let's see a quick demo of this in action. So you saw earlier how inside the portal we can create a virtual machine, how we can create a website. I can also go ahead here and say create a mobile service. Very similar experience here. You just walk through and literally in about 45 seconds you can stand up a mobile backend that you want to use as part of your application. And what I'm going to do here is log in to an account where I already have one created. So you can see what one looks like. And so you can see here I've got a mobile service called My To-Do app that I created a little bit earlier. When you first create it, we launch what's called a quick start experience that helps you get going pretty quickly. And you notice you can choose the platform you want to build your app for. And so we have instructions for, hey, if you want to connect an existing Windows 8 app, here's how to do it. If you want to create a new one, here's how to do it. We also have instructions for Windows Phone as well as iOS. So if you want to connect an existing iOS app, we even show you in Xcode how you can copy that framework assembly in and start wiring it up. So a really easy way, set of instructions that lets you get started. You can also then go ahead and create what's called data tables to store your data. So an example here, I've got an items table that I've already created, and it's just got a simple text property. If I want to create a new table, it's really easy to do that. I can just go ahead and say, let's call it friends. I can choose when I create a table, who's going to get access to it. Do I want to allow any application or any of my apps that have an application key to access it? Or maybe I want to only authenticate it, only authenticated users to my app to be able to do it. So the cool thing is you can lock down on a per operation basis on this table who has access to do what. Go ahead and hit create. And you can see here, boom, our table's been created. That's how fast it is in order to actually create a new table here. I also have what's called an identity tab. So if you remember, I just created a table and said you need to be authenticated in order to access it. This identity tab allows me to very easily paste in my secrets, or now not so secret, keys. And you notice I have Microsoft, Twitter, Google, Facebook keys that I can go ahead and paste in. Just go ahead and paste them in, hit save, and then I can then have my users use any of those mechanisms in order to authenticate with my app and read and write that data that I choose to expose. And so here's a simple mobile app that I built earlier that uses it. So it is right here. And if you go back to dashboard view, the quick start view, you'll notice if I'm creating a new app or connecting an existing app, we show you here, both for C# and JavaScript, in this case of Windows 8, how I can copy and paste this key, which is my app key, which is what I'm going to use on the client to indicate what remote endpoint in Azure I want to connect to. And you'll notice here, I've already got this pasted into my Windows 8 app that I've got loaded inside Visual Studio. And then to authenticate and store data into that items table, this is all the code I need to write on the client side. I just basically say, await mobile service.login async. This is going to log in using my default provider, in this case Microsoft ID, or if I wanted to, I could specify what type of provider I want to use. If the user isn't logged in, it'll prompt them with the appropriate Twitter, Facebook, or Microsoft login credential. They enter it in, then we'll remember it. And then to add data into that items table, this is literally all the code I need to write. I can just create a simple POCO class called item with two properties, which maps to the schema I want. Just get a table of item and then insert into it. And you'll notice throughout here, I'm reusing async and the new async language capabilities that we've added to C# and VB as part of the .NET 4.5 release pretty liberally as part of this. And that means that it's going to be very fast, and I'm not going to block the UI when I do this. And now when I go ahead and run this app, it's pulled back the data from Azure. And if I want to, I could go ahead and say give talk. And when I did that, it just went ahead. And if I go into the Azure admin tool and click data, click on items, give talk is now there stored in the back end inside Windows Azure. And so that's how easy it is to create tables connect them to a mobile client. I did it here with Windows 8. I could just as easily do it with iOS. And in the future, I'll be able to do it with Android. It makes it really fast and really easy to do it. Other thing you can do is that's cool about our data solution is if you click the script tag, is you can go ahead and write script operations that will fire when you do these data operations. So for example, I could do an insert update delete script. Right now, every time I'm inserting, you'll notice I'm writing some custom server JavaScript in order to do stuff. And so basically what it's doing is it's saying every time I insert a new item, like that little to-do item, go ahead and execute it and then get an image from Bing. And so it'll search based on what I put in the item to try to retrieve back an image. And then if it gets an image, it basically then pushes it out to any of the apps that that are subscribed to this push notification channel. And so this is taking advantage of the Windows 8 push notification capability to automatically fire out messages. So I could send messages to any of my friends or any of my subscribers that are using it. And this script capability ends up being a really powerful way that you can start to add a little bit of server-side glue code to add some custom functionality and custom behavior. And so now, for example, if I wanted to, let me go in and my to-do list, I could go ahead and say, pick a term, so I could say, Scott Gu, go. This is now saving it on the back end. If I go back now into my Windows desktop, and you'll see there's a Give Talk icon here, and what I should see in a few seconds is Scott Gu just popped up. For some reason, there's a picture of me, or it looks like a video clip of me, which is why I have a click to play. That's what Bing returned when you searched on Scott Gu images. But that example of that live tile changing was a case of Windows Azure hitting the push notification system, pushing out a change to me, and it going live. And so that's kind of integrating push notifications end-to-end throughout the system. Again, sort of an example of how easy it is to start building these types of mobile apps. A couple of questions that people asked here. Mike asked, we had created a mobile service in preview. Currently, we run mobile services in two regions inside the North America. Will you be able to run it in Europe or in Asia? Yes, once the mobile service comes out of preview, and in fact, even before it comes out of preview, we'll also offer the mobile services to be deployed in either Europe or Asia. And if you want to, you can even have your backends deployed across all of them simultaneously, and then just direct traffic to whichever data center is closest to the user at the time. So that is an option you'll be able to do. So moving on. I've talked about three ways to build and write server-side code so far: virtual machines, websites, and mobile services. I'm now going to talk about the fourth, which is what we call cloud services. And this is kind of the granddaddy of compute, so to speak, with Windows Azure. And it was the first kind of way that we enabled you to build applications in a very platform-as-a-service way. And it's something that really enables you to build infinitely scalable apps and services. So it's very, very powerful. It allows you to support what's called rich multi-tier architectures. So in the web model and the mobile model I've shown so far, it's kind of you run code in the website or in the mobile backend, and then you hit a database or other resources. With cloud services, you can introduce other tiers as well behind your front ends if you want to add even richer capability. And the beauty is it's completely automated. So when you upload an application, we'll let you scale out and deploy this multi-tier architecture in a completely automated and replicatable kind of way. And what's cool is you can take any of your existing websites and very easily convert them to be cloud services if you want to. So for example, let's go back to that website that we built a little earlier today, which is the MyConf demo website. There we go. So this is that website that we deploy using the website model. So this is great if I just want a website and a database, or I want a website and storage. Let's say I wanted to have a background service as well that was doing some non-UI tasks periodically. The website model doesn't support that. Instead, I'm going to convert this to be a cloud service, which does, because it supports multi-tier architectures. All I need to do is just right-click and click this Add Windows Azure Cloud Services project in order to enable that. And what this will do is just take my single-tier application and add another project to the solution that I can use to now indicate multiple tiers as well. And so this is just added. I still have my website, web project. Don't have to change any code there. I then have now an Azure project, which has a roles folder, which allows me to represent different roles or different tiers of my application. Right now I have a web role or web tier. If I want to, I can go ahead and add a new worker role. I could just call this background service. Click Add. And this is now just going to add another project into my solution called background service. It has the ability to basically run non-UI code. So if I just go ahead and open this file here, you'll notice there's a run method. It's just saying while true and then going to sleep every 10 seconds. For 10 seconds, and then waking up and doing it again. I could strip out this code now and run anything that I want to be continuously running in the background of my application. Just put it inside here, and now I have a background role within my app. If I go ahead and hit F5, this will spin up the Windows Azure emulator, which comes as part of our SDK tools and is integrated inside Visual Studio. And what's nice about this is it allows me to simulate a multi-tier architecture on my local dev machine. And so instead of needing to have multiple VMs that I'm running things around, I can instead just very easily go ahead and so you can see here, it just spun up. If I go down here in my tray, you'll notice there's where the compute emulator is. If I go ahead and say show compute emulator UI, you'll notice the emulator is simulating both my website, and that's why the web browser popped up, as well as that background service. And so I can drill in and even see kind of the debug spew from my trace messages across the two different tiers. It makes it very easy for me to kind of develop locally. And if I wanted my front end to call my back end, I could even have those types of connections work, all run it inside the emulator without ever having to hit the public cloud. When I want to deploy it, though, I can just right-click and hit publish. And this will walk me through a publishing wizard, very similar to the website one that you saw. Allows me to pick, again, where in the world I want to deploy it to, and then it'll upload and package up the application and deploy it inside the Windows Azure environment. So a very easy way to build really kind of very, very powerful applications, multi-tier based applications, and be able to compose them all together and manage them as a single application unit. So when I actually go ahead and deploy, what's happening? Well, we have a few set of slides that kind of walk you through in the background what happens when you do this. Basically, Visual Studio, or you can do it from TFS or from a command line, it doesn't have to be through a GUI tool, will package up what we call a service package, which is effectively a zip file that contains all the different tiers of your application, uploads it into the cloud. Windows Azure will then look at that package, discover, you know, how many tiers are you running, how many machines do you want to run it on, and then it'll automatically pick machines in our data centers to run that app on, and then deploy the code to it. As part of deploying the code, it'll not only deploy the application code, it'll also set up the virtual machines with the appropriate software. So if it's a web tier, it'll install IIS. You can also script out your deployment. So if you want to install other OS components, you can automate that as well as part of your service package. And the benefit here is it's a completely automated way in order to set up and provision any number of virtual machines. The other cool thing is once we basically deploy those apps, we'll set up a network load balancer so we can automatically direct traffic across those virtual machines for you. And then your app is live on the web. Because everything is automated, if we ever see a problem with one of those machines, like if the machine has an issue and goes down, we'll automatically pull it out of rotation and then start sending, spin up a new instance and then add that into the network rotation for you automatically. You don't have to write code. You don't have to be called in the middle of the night to log in and fix it. The model is designed to handle all of that automatically for you. The model also will automatically patch your virtual machines. So whenever like an OS patch comes out each month, we'll automatically apply it to the virtual machines, and we'll do it in such a way that you don't have to worry about your app ever being down. Instead, we'll take only one machine at a time and do the network trick so you don't have any availability issues. So a very powerful model that you can take advantage of. Once it's deployed, you can then go into the Windows Azure admin tool, and just like you can with web services and with mobile services and VMs, you can get a view of how your application is doing. We'll basically show you, again, a dashboard view. So in this case here, I have the CPU of my system. I can see how it's doing. And then just like you can with websites and VMs, you can scale it up or scale it down at will. And so just go to the Scale tab, and I can scale up to 15 instances in this case, or I can scale it back down. And we'll handle automatically scaling up and scaling down that app, even across multiple tiers. So I could say I want two front ends, and if I had a back-end role, I could say I want four back-end roles. And you can scale each tier independently, all in an automated way. So very, very powerful thing that you take advantage of. One thing you're hopefully seeing through a lot of these demos is a lot of the kind of the built-in management capabilities that we provide and a bunch of kind of the core infrastructure that we provide so that you don't have to actually worry about it. And this kind of goes to a model that we like to talk about with Windows Azure, which is focus on apps, not infrastructure. You know, wherever possible as developers, as you're building your apps, you know, focus on the part that has value. Don't have to worry as much about the plumbing, and instead leverage services and core infrastructure that we provide that do it for you. And you've seen this already with some of our compute models. We also, as part of Windows Azure, provide a bunch of what we call application building blocks that you can use as developers that are back-end services that, again, we provide, we patch, we scale, we provide an SLA for you, and that you as developers can just call and take advantage of. So a couple examples of these would be big data. So if you want to run Hadoop jobs, we're going to have a Hadoop service that's public shortly that you can go ahead and upload a lot of data and then run MapReduce jobs against. If you want a database, we'll provide that. If you want storage, including petabytes of storage, we provide that. We've got media services. So if you want to encode video, just go ahead and upload video, kick off a REST command, and we'll scale it out. We've got messaging and more. So lots of cool capabilities that you can provide. One I'm just going to quickly show here is a SQL database capability. We have, typically for most apps, you want to have a database to store data in. You can run a database, a SQL database, inside a virtual machine and call it from a website or from a cloud service. But we also have this cool SQL database capability that's built into Windows Azure where you don't have to spin up your own virtual machine. You don't have to patch your database. You don't have to worry about backups. The system takes care of it for you. And it's clustered for high availability. And so I thought I'd just do a quick demo of this. This is a demo all the devs love, and most of the IT pros don't. But I usually ask people sometimes questions of, when you want a database from your IT department or from your infrastructure provider, how quickly can you get one? You know, is it going to take you minutes? Does it take you days? Does it take you hours? Does it take you weeks? Does it take you months in order to get a new database that you can use for your project? With Windows Azure, creating a new database is simple. Just go ahead and hit New. Go ahead and hit Data Services. Click SQL Database. Hit Quick Create. Give it a name. So we'll say Azure ConfDB. I can pick this server here. Go ahead and hit Create. And you'll notice down here we're creating the SQL database. 5, 4, 3. It's done. I now have a database that I can go ahead and use. Just go ahead and hit click on that. Again, I have a dashboard view. I can now program against it. And this is a SQL database, so I can install any number of tables. This is not a table. This is a database. I can install, Sprocks. I can install tables. I can do whatever I want against it. I can export the data if I want to and save it to blob storage. This gives me a way I can back up across data centers and have a persistent copy here. I can just get the connection strings and I can program against it in whatever language I want. And that's literally how fast it is to create and gives you kind of, again, a lot of power, a lot of capability in order to program against it. That's just one of the services. We have other services. For example, we have a caching service. So if you don't want to be hitting the database each time from within your application, you can instead stand up what's called a distributed cache within Windows Azure that you can then use to have a low latency end memory cache that you can access. And this basically gives you a very, very fast read and write cache. It averages about 1.1 millisecond latency. And it's all in memory, so you're never having to hit disk. And it's designed so that you can grow and shrink the cache at any point. And basically the way it works is you can turn on the cache within your existing web roles or worker roles inside your cloud service applications. You basically just go into properties on that role, and you can just say, I want, say, to use 30% of the available memory on the machine to form a cache. And what's cool is if I have, for example, 4 web roles or 2 instances of my web roles, we'll do what's called a ring join so that we will form a single 1.2 gigabyte distributed cache. And we'll basically use 300 megabytes of memory on each of the machines. What's nice about this is it doesn't cost anything to do it. You're already paying for that VM. So this is actually you can take advantage of at no extra cost. And now whenever one of these apps saves or reads from the cache, it can even hop off to another machine in order to do it. So if, for example, I retrieve something from the database and stick it on the cache on this machine, and then this machine in the web app tries to access the same item, it will automatically be able to retrieve it without having to hit the database again. And that's because it's a distributed cache. And this differs from, say, for example, the ASP.NET in-memory cache, where it's only available to apps on the single machine. In a distributed cache, it's available to all the machines to use. We also support the ability, if you want to basically have dedicated machines, where instead of hosting the cache on your web roles, you just create a worker role, like we did in that background service, and then just dedicate it to the cache entirely. So in this case here, I have 2 12-gig caches to form a 24-gig cache. And then just like you saw when I went into that web tool, the admin tool, and I could scale up my instances, I could do the same thing with my cache dynamically. And so if I wanted to have 4 instances of the cache, I could do it to increase to 48 gigs. We have some customers that have hundreds of gigabytes of in-memory cache. And the beauty is it looks like just one cache to all these apps. And as you scale up and scale down, you don't have to worry about data getting lost as you scaled up. It'll automatically repartition. And when you reduce the number of caches, we'll actually shift, wherever possible, the items onto other machines before we turn off the machine, so you don't lose the data when you collapse it as well. So very powerful feature to take advantage of. Gives you a great way to add performance. A couple other features I'm going to briefly mention that are cool to take advantage of, something we call the service bus. This gives you a distributed messaging system backend that you can take advantage of. It gives you the ability to do very secure messaging and relay capabilities. It enables you to easily build hybrid apps and enable what we call loosely coupled solutions. So the way I usually like to explain it is, if you've ever built an app that's talking directly to a database or to a service on the back end, this is often what's called a tightly coupled model. The downside with it is, let's say that back end service or database goes down. If your web front end is directly talking to it, it's going to go down as well if it has a core dependency on it, and you might be showing site unavailable message to your customers. In a loosely coupled model, you instead can take advantage of a messaging solution like the service bus and introduce what's called like a queue, which sits between your front end and your back end. And with a queue, instead of talking directly to the service, I can then create what are called messages, put it in the queue, and then the background service can pull the messages from the queue and do something with them. The beauty about this model is, if the back end goes down for me, I can still, on my front end, be firing messages into the queue. And then once the back end comes back up, it can then automatically process those messages, and the customer never knew that the system was down. And this gives me a nice way that I can distribute work, add more availability, and do things in a more async kind of way. What's also nice from a performance perspective is I could use a queue so that I could have, for example, 3 front ends and 2 back ends, and I could dump messages into the queue and then automatically distribute them across the different back ends to process. And in a cloud services world, the nice thing is I can scale up and scale down my front ends and back ends based on the traffic and need that I have. And this enables a very nice scale out architecture where I don't have to change any code as I do it. So a lot of benefits to this. What I'm going to show here is a simple demo that's kind of fun. So if you have a browser, which since you're watching this online live, I guess you do, open it up here and you can be part of it. Basically, I'm going to go ahead and point you at a web app that I'm running inside Windows Azure. And you're going to be able to send me a message and type in a form to send me a message. This app is then going to save the message that you give me into the service bus queue. So it's going to create a message object, you can save it. And then my local laptop here, running inside Redmond in the studio, I'm going to pull these messages and display them on my screen. And so this gives you a simple example of how we can do end-to-end messaging from the cloud, from your PC to the cloud, and then down to my laptop in a nice distributed way. So let's go ahead and give this a try. So the code that I'm going to show you looks like so. It's a simple MVC app, and actually, let's just go ahead and bring it up. And it's running live on the web right now, and it's called scottgoomessage.cloudapp.net. So let me just type that in there. So if you want to try it out yourself, there is the URL. And basically, you can just type in a message, "Hi, Scott," hit send. This web role is just going to go ahead and save that message into a service bus queue. I can then, a little bit later on, pull that message and do something with it. And I guess my VM is spinning up for the first time. We can go ahead and dump that message pretty easily there. The code to do this looks like so. Basically, it's just an MVC controller, and I've got an index and a send message method. When I hit post, I'm posting it. I'm just creating a queue client that's connecting to the service bus, creating a brokered message object, and sending it to it. And then I just redisplay the form. And so if I go ahead here, another one, You can see there now it's pretty fast, it's running. So this app is just posting there, and then I can go ahead and write a very simple client app. Like so, this is gonna be running my local laptop. And it's just a command line console. I'm connecting to that same service bus queue, and I just loop endlessly pulling messages and writing them out. So if I go ahead and hit run now, you'll see, there we go. a lot of people apparently using it. If you want to add it, there you go. There's the URL to do it. And basically, these are people that are hitting, again, this web app that's running in the cloud. Anytime you post a message to it, it's running to a service bus message, and then I'm basically pulling it out and displaying it on my local laptop here. And that's an example of a distributed service model working in action. The cool thing here is it lets me distribute stuff. You'll notice a whole bunch of people had a bunch of messages waiting for me before I even ran that app. That's also a nice example of how, even if my backend was down, you were still able to post messages. And then when I came back up, I was able to process it. So a nice scale out, a nice way to do distributed applications and add a lot of reliability. That's one way you can use the service bus. It's super powerful. Another cool way that you can take advantage of it is to use what we call our relay capabilities. This is the one we just saw. Another capability we have is what's called relay capabilities. This is great if you're in, say, a corporate environment and you've got a database or an app behind the firewall, but you want to, for example, build a web app or a mobile app that can talk to it. And so what's cool about this model is you can go ahead and publish using WCF a service behind the firewall that connects to the service bus relay running inside Windows Azure and effectively broadcast a WCF endpoint using SOA technology. Then I can basically have a website or a cloud service or a VM connect to that same endpoint through the service bus and be able to call into your application. The beauty here is it's a secure way that I can publish just the functionality I want. I can ACL this so that only my app in the cloud can use it. And it provides me a nice way, if I can't migrate my database or my application inside my firewall to the cloud, I can still build applications in the cloud that can interact with it in a secure way. And so, simple example here would be some code that looks like this. I have a customer contract interface that has a get customers and get customer by ID method. I've got a customer service implementation of that. It's just using the Entity Framework to retrieve data from the Northwind database. And then I have a simple command line console app. It's going to connect to the service bus, and it's going to publish this customer service to a relay endpoint I've created. And when I run this now, I'm now connected to my database locally on my laptop, and I'm publishing the service bus relay to the cloud. And then I can build a web app that connects to it. So this is a simple example of this relay application. If you want to use it, there's a lot of people, so we'll see whether or not the one machine in the cloud that I'm running has enough resources to do it. But if you go to scottgurulay.cloudapp.net, you can go ahead and click on the customers list here. It just called through, so this is running in the cloud on the left-hand side. It just called through the service bus relay to my local laptop where I just retrieved the data. And if I click on an individual record, it's going to also retrieve the record for that individual user. So basically, if anyone out there wants to go ahead and do the exact same thing right now, you can access this application. And the beauty here is you're actually accessing the data off of my laptop, believe it or not. Zip, someone out there in the web just did it. A whole bunch of other people now are doing it. You're basically tunneling through the web to my local laptop, getting access to my Northwind customer data. And you can see a lot of people are trying it out right now. And since there seems to be tens of thousands of people watching this talk, if you do get an error, I apologize. I only have like one small VM that's actually running as my web app. The beauty is I could go into the portal and scale that up in a really fast way and take advantage of it. And the beauty, again, just like with web services and all the other resources, there's a service bus point in the portal. And so for this, any of these operations, like this orders here, you can see I can get traffic information about how many messages are in the queue. And so I've got about 60K of messages in the queue. I can also, if I click on the relay tab, you'll notice I have one listener. That's my laptop right now that's published, and I can see directly inside the portal kind of what's going on there, and a lot of people are accessing it. And the beauty is, once I don't want to publish this database anymore, I just go ahead and hit close, and I just disabled all your access to that service. So again, it's a very secure way that I can go ahead and publish anything I want, again, from my existing enterprise up in, again, a very secure, clean way. So lots of built-in services that we've just walked through, lots more I could spend time on, but I'm already over time, so I'm not. Instead, I'm going to talk about one last thing before we wrap up, which is called the Windows Azure Store. You saw a bunch of services on that previous list that we're providing. Our goal with the Windows Azure Store is to give you an ability to integrate not only with our services, but also with services that are provided by some of our great partners, because we don't think we can build everything. And we're trying to, with the Windows Azure Store, make it really easy for you to consume these types of capabilities from a variety of partners, make it easy for you to try and purchase them directly on your account, and have the billing be integrated with your Azure bill. And the benefit here is it means if you buy something, you don't have to give out your credit card to a third party. You just give it to us. We'll bill on your behalf. And it just shows up as a line item on your monthly Azure bill. So let's go ahead and see that in action. So if I go into my portal here, the same way that I could say new website, new virtual machine, new mobile service, I can also say new store. When I do that, it brings up this storefront UI here, which is our partner list. And we've got partners ranging from, say, Mongo Lab, if you want to do MongoDB hosting, New Relic for app hosting. We've got SendGrid. Someone asked earlier about how to do sending email inside the cloud. SendGrid is a great service that you can use in order to actually send email. And what's nice is if you click on any of these partners, you'll notice their pricing tiers. So SendGrid allows you to do 6,000 free emails per month at no cost forever. They also then have a bronze tier. So if you want to do 40,000 emails a month, you can go ahead and do that. It gives you richer diagnostics and other things, capabilities as well. And you just basically can choose what tier you want and when you want to buy something. So let's just do the free tier. You can then just go ahead and, let's say SendGrid 2, since I already have a SendGrid account. Just go ahead and click next. We'll calculate whether this thing is going to cost you anything. In this case here, I'm just buying the free tier, so it's not going to cost me anything. And if I just click this purchase button, in about 45 seconds, I will have a SendGrid service that I can now use from within Windows Azure. So it's that easy to purchase it. Anything that you purchase will show up in this add-ons link in the bottom of the portal. And so you can see I purchased a few things already. That's SendGrid already there. What's nice about it is I can try it out using that free account. I can then go ahead and hit the upgrade button at a later point if I want to upgrade to a higher tier. And I don't need to redeploy or get a new key. It's all integrated directly into the Azure portal, how you can both purchase as well as upgrade. Going to show off one cool service that I've been using lately, which is the MongoDB as a service that's provided by MongoLab, one of our partners. They have a free tier that you can take advantage of, gives you 500 megabytes of storage. What's nice about this is you can easily sign up literally in about 45 seconds. If you click this connection info, you can get your key so that within your client code, you can call against this Mongo service. They also have we've integrated single sign-on. So if you click the manage link inside the Windows Azure console down here, it'll launch the Mongo Lab admin tool. And then I can, without having to log in, we do single sign-on, I can then create MongoDB collections and then program against them. And so if I wanted to create a new collection called FooBar or AzureConf, I could do that, hit create. In a matter of seconds, I now have an AzureConf MongoDB collection that I can then program against, all of which for free. And my last demo here, let me show you just a simple app that I built. Looks like so. It's basically just a simple MVC app, and I can run it locally. I can also run it in the cloud, obviously, but I'm just going to run it locally here. And it basically is just a friends list. So if I want to add I don't know what his alias is. Is it Bill G or whatever? Twitter thing. I can just go ahead and use MVC and save it. And this is storing it inside MongoLab. Inside the cloud. And all I need to do from an ASP.NET MVC perspective, I just built a standard app, used the standard CRUD templates, And this is the code to effectively connect to my MongoLab database and my friends database. You'll notice here I have a friend class that I've created in my models folder that just has a couple of columns, and I just add that I want it to be an ID there. And I can then basically just map to and from my MongoDB database, return back a friends collection, and then I just pass it off to a view in order to render it. And then for creating it, again, I just go ahead and post it in using standard model binding, get a collection, save this new record into it, and refresh. And that's pretty much how easy it is. And if you go to the index to see what it looks like when I display it, there we go. Yeah, that's standard ASP.NET Razor template there that I'm doing against it. But the beauty here is I'm storing it now in Mongo Labs. And so if I go to my friends collection here, you can see there is that new Bill Gates record I just stored, and there's the ID as part of it. And so it's, you know, a really simple way that if I can use SQL to do this, I can also use a NoSQL solution like MongoLab. And the beauty about the store is it gives me access to all those different types of resources for me to use. And so definitely recommend checking that out. Again, it's all integrated into the portal. These are some of the great partners that we have already, more being added in the near future. I actually should mention the store today, as of right now, is only available to customers in the U.S. You're going to see us next month. We hope to basically make it available worldwide. So if you're outside the U.S. today, unfortunately, you can't take advantage of it just yet. Wait a few weeks, and then you'll be able to, and we'll make sure we do announcements when we do that. We're just got to finalize some tax things to make sure that, because we bill in your local currency, that we can support all the other currencies out there as well. So that's a quick wrap-up of some of the features. To learn more, go to the Azure website, click on the Develop tab. We've got dev centers for lots of different languages, lots of tutorials for everything that I've walked through this morning, and also for a lot more. All of our SDKs for those languages are available under an Apache 2 license on GitHub, so you can also check out the source for any of our libraries directly. We're available in 89 countries and territories around the world today, so you can sign up for that free trial and get started and start building your applications. And hopefully you've seen throughout this morning, we're super flexible, super open, super solid, really opens up and enables a bunch of great capabilities for you to take advantage of. Definitely recommend if you haven't tried out Windows Azure to give it a try and learn more. And again, you can start now by going to the WindowsAzure.com website. For the rest of the day, we got some great talks coming up in about 4 minutes. The next set of talks will start. We have two tracks, so you can choose which track you want to use. Some really great speakers, all of them non-Microsoft. So you're going to hear straight from real customers, their experiences, the good, bad, and the ugly. Ask them questions and hope that this is a great opportunity to learn more about Windows Azure. And we're looking forward to seeing what you build with it. Thanks a bunch and have a great day. Mm-hmm.